talking with Dr. Pariski at the IAU in Montreal on 20 August 1979. Can you tell me what your educational background was and when you first came into contact with radio astronomy?
I have been in three different high schools, in a so-called Moscow Mechanical Institute, and I have got there some extra education on the general physical science, mechanics, mathematics. Then I changed high school to the so-called Institute of, how I have to say in English, Institute of Radio Science, maybe.
Yes.
And I have got some information on the general background in the field of electricity and radio electronics as well.
Right.
And last high school, which was inspired by Professor Shklovsky, which is friends of our family.
Oh, I see. Well, that's right. You told me that your father was his thesis.
That's right. So I have changed drastically my field and went to the Moscow University. And Shklovsky was my teacher.
I see. Right.
We were in the same group with Dr. Kardashov.
Yes.
Dr. Kurt, which is very strong now in Lyman Alpha exploration through the satellites.
And the geocorona and
that's
so
right,
forth.
Yes. That's right. And many other people are, which were connected with Dr. Shklovsky, are rather active now.
Right.
In quite different fields.
But this is all at the same time in the...
Yeah.
What time is this we're talking about now?
I had over high school in 1955. Then I joined Professor Hykin.
Yes.
Who is the best, best expert in experimental radio physics.
The best in the Soviet Union, would you say?
Yeah.
What about the
cable? He is connected with the foundation of all experimental points in the Soviet Union in radio astronomy. In Crimea.
Yes.
Near Gorky, a little bit. Physical Institute, Moscow Physical
Lebedev,
Institute,
Lebedev. Yes.
Yeah. Bulkov Observatory, Ratan 600 as well.
You're saying that he was involved in the founding of all of these?
That's right. That's right.
Could you tell me a little bit about that?
The first beginning, I think, his activity was connected with the possibility to use radio sources for radar systems. To check the position.
For calibration?
Yeah,
yes.
To check the position.
Right.
And to improve our knowledge in the radio refraction. It was a big job at the end of 40s.
Right, right.
And Professor Hykin was involved in this process deeply, and he organized a new, rather broadly, I have some difficulties with words. Rather big station.
Yes.
In Crimea, and at the same time, his group used this equipment for science. And after realizing the importance of the radio astronomy, and it comes from the contact with Dr. Ginsburg,
yes,
and Shklovsky,
right,
which were extremely enthusiastic, and it was decided to organize new department in a physical institute, Lebedev Physical Institute, Moscow. When Pulkov Observatory was reconstructed after the Second War, you know that the observatory was destroyed completely.
Yes, completely.
Director of this observatory, academician Mikhailov.
Mikhailov, yes.
One of the oldest astronomers in the Soviet Union. He invited Professor Haikin to organize a radio astronomy department
in
this old-fashioned observatory.
Well, this is interesting. Now, he was a traditional optical astronomer.
That's right.
And yet he saw the importance of radio astronomy.
That's right. It's an important point, yeah.
Now, this is what year, would you say, roughly? What year was this?
It was in 1953. Mm-hmm. And Professor Haikin and his collaborator, Dr. Kaidanovsky, they were ready to construct a new type of the radio telescope, rattans type, name it Pulkova type radio telescope.
The section of a parabola, a thin strip.
That's right. The first idea was to escape from the mechanical difficulties only. Professor Haikin suggested that classical geodetical methods give us a relative accuracy 10 and minus 6, where the usual mechanical construction give us only 10 and minus 4 as the best.
I see.
So two orders of magnitudes may be gained by coming to the geodetical method, but not to connect all parts of the aerial by metallical construction.
Right. Now, when you said classical geodetic, did you mean geometric or
geodetical?
What does that mean? Now, I'm not quite sure what you mean.
Well, theodolite surveys.
Oh, I see. Just standard surveying techniques.
Yeah, that's right. Classical surveying technique. A little bit later, we decided with Professor Haikin that it's quite possible. It was in 1955 to invent an aperture synthesis system with the same technique.
Yes.
Having a possibility to observe at a different azimuth.
Right. Get all the different
system.
UV cuts, as we say.
Yeah.
Yes.
We have realized, looking at Dublin Symposium on Radio Astronomy, that Wild and I think Smert had the same idea, trying to rotate the naive beam system, naive beam pattern.
Right.
And it was in 1955.
Right. Yes.
All our activity next 10 years were connected with attempt to construct a big system of this type.
I see.
The very important point which Professor Haikin had was the strong correlation between optical and radio fields instrumentation. In optical, there are reflectors and refractors.
Yes.
And he states that refractors are not so good as reflectors because the image is forming in a, not in a vacuum or air, but in some material.
Becomes so, distorted.
Distortion, temperature variation, phase fluctuation, chromatism, losses, everything. So he decided to introduce this term, the same terminology, in a radio domain.
Yes.
Reflectors, the usual disks, for example, and the refractors, it's just a interferometer system, where with the help of cables or lines
so
or something
like that. The cable
like
acts
like
essentially
that.
Like a lens
That's right. Exactly so.
Achromatic and so forth.
So having a good possibility to increase the base, there are many difficulties.
So you wanted to, the idea then was to minimize the amount of cabling and so forth, you're saying?
Or to escape completely
yes.
from the cables, just to have a focal arrangement, nothing else.
So would you, and what you're saying then is that he is the father of this entire method that led up to the Rattan 600.
Yeah. So we decided to construct a principally new system, which in a common understanding, in the present understanding or classification, inside the present classification, is the only reflector type aperture synthesis system. The only available.
That does not use cables or microwave links
that's right.
or something like that.
So
right.
it's very flexible. It's as flexible as a usual dish, but it's escaped from many difficulties.
Right.
First of all, I'll better to review some prospects of this kind of instruments. We decided at those time to suggest for international purposes a big system which realized all possibilities to be beneath the atmosphere.
Yes. Now this is the 1950s you're still talking that you were...
We reported at the IAU meeting at Hamburg in 1964.
Right, okay.
We suggested in 1958 this type of system at IAU meeting also
in Moscow.
In Moscow,
right.
Which was not so great, just about I think about 2 by 10 and 4 meter square collecting surface. But at Hamburg we suggested the maximum possible system of this kind, and the limitation we have just usual atmospheric sink vacs. Nothing else.
No, when you say international, I didn't quite see what you meant. Were you suggesting that several countries
some suggestion from ERSI meeting in Tokyo in 1963, I think. John Bolton was chairman of the special committee, which was trying to collect all suggestion for construction of international, really international radio telescope. By some reason, it was not in operation, this commission. There were many difficulties. We suggest 2 points, Abyssinia and the northern part of India. And just in this time, something happened in Abyssinia and something happened in northern part of Pakistan.
We suggested
just near Pakistan.
I see.
At the same time, many radio astronomy group just received their own instruments. Interest to
declined. Yes,
declined a little bit. That was
right.
my feeling. And John Bolton also, he was very interested in quick using of new Parkes.
The Parkes
dish.
Was new, right.
Was not also interested.
Now, let me just tell you also that my study is ending in the early 1960s because the field gets too large if I start to take
it beyond there.
So I want to concentrate on those early years.
Please.
Let me ask you about Kaiken. He's not alive now, is he? So unfortunately, I cannot.
In 1968.
Cannot talk to him. I always think of Vitkevich as being an important person on the instrumentation side. Was he mainly receivers, and Kaiken was maybe mainly antennas? Would you say that's fair?
Well, I think it's better to say that Kaiken is more fundamental one. He knew radio physics and mechanic extremely well.
Mm-hmm.
Broadband understanding of the nature. And Vitkevich is much narrower. That's my personal point. But he was really active in interpretation of observation. Also, solar corona,
right.
like that scattering,
right.
And so he had his own field in radio astronomy. hiking had general interest to everything.
Right, but did not Vitkevich also build receivers and
yeah,
and so forth? Yes.
Yeah. Vitkevich is again the how do you call it? Student of hiking.
Oh, I see.
Much younger.
And
he was much younger.
At Moscow?
I think, yes.
University?
I can remember. Right here.
So let's go back to your personal history. You were a student under Shklovsky, and
yeah.
What was the first radio astronomy that you actually were involved in yourself? What sort of project? Was it that eclipse project? Or?
The very first?
Yes.
I was, being a student, I was involved in construction of a new receiver at 8 millimeter. At 1953, you can imagine what it was. And new high frequency technique, new phase shifting system, which very unusual for at the present moment. For example, for modulation, we have used a seventh overtone of a usual, how do you call this,
the beating, you mean, or?
I think, yes, to check a piano or something like that.
Of a standard oscillator, you mean, or?
Yeah, mechanical one.
Oh, a mechanical, a tuning fork,
something. Yeah, that's right.
I see. Amazing.
But it was in a good operation. We had good sensitivity. We have constructed a small dish, and we decided to find to observe eclipse.
Yes.
Near Novomoskovsk, the place not very far from Dnepropetrovsk. And we after first data reduction, we have found that the limb, we have no definite limb brightening, but new effect appeared, the central brightening.
It did fall off, and it was brighter in the center.
Right. Brighter, it was unexpectedly. By the way, there was no computer facilities, and I remember that I have found very interesting paper in an astrophysical journal by Julius in 1908 something like that, and he suggested to resolve this mathematical problem of deconvolution just by waiting on the how do you call this
yes
system. The weights in the equations. You just put on a list the tracks of the moon.
On a big big piece of paper, and then you cut them out.
Cut and weigh it, just.
And then you actually do weigh the pieces of paper.
Yeah.
in a real analog method. And did you do that?
Yes. Very quickly. In one day, the problem was solved.
You didn't have to worry about Fourier transforms or anything.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Mm-hmm. But now, the paper about this eclipse was not published until 1958. Why was there such a delay?
I think it's because I was not interested in publication. The most interested person was my local chief in that moment, Dr. Solomonovich, very important man for millimeter domain. And preparing his doctoral thesis, he decided to publish our all results, which was written just in a student work,
report.
Report, exactly so.
Where is Solomonovich now?
He is working, and he decided to be involved in a satellite type exploration, submillimeter wavelength region.
Now, this is recently you're saying that he decided?
Well, last 10 years.
Last 10 years. Which institute is he at now, though?
The same institute, physical institute, Lebedev Physical
okay.
Institute. It's a very big institute.
Because I'd like to talk to him also when I visit the Soviet Union.
It's a very important person for you. And he is very clever and good. He has good memory on the history of radio astronomy.
Good.
And he is responsible in Soviet Union for writing a special paper on radio astronomy, on history of radio astronomy.
I have a copy of that. I do have
it's
a copy.
Old one.
Yes, but it's very valuable for me, though.
I see.
It's the only one I've been able to find.
I see.
Do you know of any other papers like that anyone has written up about the history?
New one is in preparation, and again through Solomonovich.
By him, I see.
Yeah.
Wait, do you know where he intends to publish it?
I think no earlier than the next half year.
But do you know in what journal? Is he planning?
No, you may write.
Yes, I will.
Write him.
So you were a student then for these years from 1954 to
55.
To 55 till.
Yeah. Now, 50. Then I became a postgraduate student with a professor Haikin.
And that was starting in what year?
In 55? Starting at 55.
Yes. Well, I'm confused now. Your postgraduate work began in 59?
No, at 55.
In 55?
Yeah.
With Kaikin?
Yeah.
When were you working with Shklovsky?
Before that.
Oh, before that time, I see. But it was all...
We were the first students with my wife, Sobolyova, maybe heard about.
Oh, I see.
She's just
I didn't know she was
working,
your wife.
Simultaneously, the same time. Sobolyova,
yes.
She is my wife.
Okay, I couldn't tell from the names there.
And we were both students of Shklovsky.
I see.
Same university,
okay.
Same group.
So when you became a postgraduate student, what kind of work did you begin doing with Haikin?
Just to explore the possibilities of new type of radio telescope. And from observation point of view, I have come through the everything. we had very interesting method with Haikin. He just gave the very, very general direction, nothing else. And you have to do everything yourself. The receivers, mechanical parts in the workshop.
Yes.
Just working.
The lathe.
Everything. Tuning the receivers, tuning the antenna system, observation and data reduction, interpretation, and general philosophy. Everything.
Right.
Comes through the zero to the very end.
Well, like you said, he was a broadband man, and
yeah.
He wanted to.
And I think the first generation of radio astronomer in the Soviet Union all came from through this good school.
I see. Which other people would you name that were?
Well, Solomonovich.
Yes.
Also, Sobolyova also. Mm-hmm. She is a woman, but nevertheless, he have to do everything.
Yes.
Gelfreich, maybe heard about. Gelfreich, solar people.
Yes.
Korolkov.
Yes.
Ryshkov, 21 centimeter person. Kardashov as well, also.
Yes.
He had constructed his own receiver, which was not in a good operation, but nevertheless, he spent 3 years to construct
the whole
receiver.
Thing.
Yeah.
I see. Well, tell me about some of the projects that you worked on. It looks like you were using the new Pulkovo reflector in the late 50s, or was this after you left Haikin's?
No, just inside.
Inside, I see.
Haikin was at Pulkovo.
Oh, I see.
From 53 to the death.
So you were at University of Leningrad then?
No.
No.
I have been in Moscow.
But you were, that's what I thought.
Mm-hmm.
But
up to 1955.
Oh, but then you moved.
Then I moved to Pulkovo with marriage, after marriage with Sobolyova, we changed the place.
Right, you changed your address.
Yeah.
To Leningrad, okay.
Yeah, that's right.
But now, so was it Hykin who was the person behind the building of the large reflector at Pulkovo?
That's right, exactly so.
And this was how large in diameter?
100 meter radius. That means, and 130 meters the length of
the strip. Right.
3 meters in height. And again, it was interesting time. Everything was done very cheaply and by our hand. We just digit earth to
put the concrete in the holes.
Everything, yeah.
Yeah. So you're saying it was equivalent to a 100 meter reflector. A 100-meter dish in its collecting area.
As far as resolution.
Oh, equivalent to 100 meter in diameter.
In diameter, 130 meter in diameter, but the collecting surface is more or less comparable with 25 meter dish.
I see.
At Rattan 600, we have 600 meter dimension and
right.
100 meter equivalent in the collecting surface.
Now, is the Rattan really just a larger version of this first Pulkovo
telescope? Well, a little bit change in philosophy, I just told you, because after construction Pulkovo telescope, we have realized that it's possible to arrange aperture synthesis observations. So we need in a complete circle and to arrange observation at different azimuths.
And that was not possible with the first version, right?
Yeah.
Now, but this 8mm receiver you had, that must have been a small dish that you used for that.
Yeah, very small, as I can remember, about 2 meter dish.
I see.
2 meter dish.
And was the equipment that you were using then, was it largely military surplus equipment, or was it all built
own? No, all built our own, yeah.
There was very little cooperation with getting stuff from the military?
Well, maybe some waveguides, just waveguides, we received from industry, I think from military branch, I don't know.
Right. But mainly it was
too young to think about.
About money. And. But mainly it was just built yourself, I think.
Yeah, every waveguide junction, everything we have done ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Oh, another thing I wanted to ask is I know that Kaikin had a sea cliff interferometer.
Yeah.
In the Crimea. Was
that's
that
right.
on the Black Sea?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. And what town? Do you remember where it was?
Oh, it's near Simeiz again. Mm-hmm. Simeiz, small town in south coast.
Because Professor Schlossky told me about visiting that one time in the early days.
Mm-hmm.
But now, so using this reflector, you looked at the strongest radio sources, Cygnus, Taurus.
I began from a solar radar observation at 8 centimeter, and we were happy with a new broadband system, traveling wave tubes, which were very popular in a military branch in the Soviet Union. We received traveling wave tubes at all frequencies down to 8 millimeter. And bandwidth was unusual broad.
Right.
So and even with medium noise figure, we had a good sensitivity.
Right.
And better than, I think, anyone, a little bit earlier than United States.
What sort of noise figures did they have?
Well, it was a little less than 10 noise figure, but for the end of 50s.
That's still quite good. Like you say, with a broad band, it gave you good sensitivity.
Yeah, that's right. So we began with solar observation, then everything.
What would you say were the main scientific results that came from those observations that you were doing?
At 60s?
Yes, in the late 50s with the,
late 50s. Oh,
with the traveling wave tubes and so forth.
I think it's some personal, I have some personal feeling, and there's a lot of subjective.
Well, sure, I'm asking you.
The most interesting, the most exciting for me, at least, was first observation of the galactic center in 1950. In the early spring 1958, independently from Drake's measurements in the United States. And looking at three frequencies measurements, I was surprised greatly how strange the shape of the source is, quite unexpectedly. By the way, it seems to me that the interpretation of this region, this emission, even with a much higher resolution we have now,
yes,
many observers and at our Rattan 600, I shall tell this session next, I think next Wednesday, about our new observation, doesn't change greatly. Again, the mixture of non-thermal and thermal emission,
right,
the shape a little bit changing, something, small changes, except point sources. And second, it's a distribution of the emission across the Venus disk.
Oh, yes.
Because it was a great struggle between two opposite groups, ionospheric model,
right,
and a greenhouse
right,
model. And we decided to check this, and we proved that it's not ionospheric model,
which would give you limb brightening.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. And I remember I have been at a high level discussion connected with the mission, Venus mission.
Which one
we expected to have in the Soviet Union?
Right,
the first one.
The very first.
Very
is,
first one.
Yes,
and. We have made a report on our new results. There was some trembling in the solution, but at the last point, old-fashioned group gained, and it decided do not take into account our observations.
In what sense now do not take into account?
Not protect the ship from high.
From high temperatures
and high pressure.
I see.
So, it's but frankly speaking, it was just too late to change something.
Right. It was. They'd already made all their plans and all.
Yeah.
But now this was the which mission now is this? Can you remind me what year it was and what was the name of the mission?
Well, it's just the first mission. I can't remember exactly. It was in when it was in. Late 1961.
Mm-hmm. And did this mission actually go inside the Venus atmosphere and,
yeah,
and was crushed? And,
yeah, that's right.
Right,
that's right.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting.
Well, another interesting thing, it's the first discoveries of the polarization of the moon.
Oh, yes.
By Sobolev.
Tell me about that.
Exciting also.
Was that using the same...
The same reflector,
yes,
yeah.
Right.
Troitsky predicted this kind of effect.
Mm-hmm.
Moon is just dielectrical body, and thermal emission have to be polarized. But frankly speaking, I was sure that the result will be negative. We had attempted many times with a single dish measurements, smaller resolution. With smaller resolution, but we have failed.
Right.
And but my wife was extremely strong in
right,
her feeling and willing to get
right,
the observation. So he just made us to give time.
Give her the time.
Yeah.
Yes.
And the very first observation was extremely clear. The curve looks like. Bump, another side, one edge, opposite at the middle, and again bump at another side, in the difference
between
two polarization
right,
due to higher resolution of
right,
the Bulkhorn telescope. And the signal-to-noise ratio about 1 to 100 or 1,000.
Hmm. So it was a matter that the polarization was different on different parts of the moon, and
now,
therefore with the big beam you were... missing it, or?
With bigger beam due to the symmetry,
yes,
we shall expect zero effect.
Right.
Because
right,
the polarization vector is symmetrical.
Yeah.
Display is, you understand what I mean.
Did you ever look for polarization in the galactic background or in radio sources
yeah,
at that time?
Yeah, and Sobolev mostly was involved in this. I think, well, the it's another interesting just psychological point. Cygnus E was the first source which was resolved not by interferometrical means,
by a field observation,
with our radio telescope. Mm-hmm. And I have been surprised that the ratio of the component we have is exactly the same as from a Jodelbank group. Jennison, maybe you remember.
Jennison and Dasgupta.
Very interesting person, yeah.
Right.
But the east-west difference exists. We have a stronger one component, they have another.
Oh, I see. So you had the same ratio, but in the opposite sense between the two components.
Being, I was happy also being in 1962 at summer school on radio astronomy at Jodelbank.
Yes, I know.
It was very interesting summer school. And I had a conversation with Jennison.
Yes.
Because I had reconstruct their published fringe and phase visibilities.
Right.
And I have got exactly the same picture as we have with direct measurements. So I suspect that there is some wrong in his data reduction process.
Yes.
And he agreed it was too young person, and he made many mistakes. And so
I see. Now, what is the ratio between the two components? Can you
20%
20% difference?
Yeah.
And so, in fact, it turned out that you were right. That's interesting.
Yeah, that's right.
Now, I noticed also that you were measuring the asymmetry in Virgo A, and saying that the position was slightly offset from the galaxy, and so you're doing some rather accurate positional work also.
Yes, but the first interesting observation was made in the end of 50s. It was Omega Nebula.
Yes.
I was surprised greatly that the position does not coincide with the position of the optical center.
Yes.
Being in Crimea, I have found a good plate which was taken by Shine,
yes,
our famous observer, and have made a H-alpha mapping of this source.
The isophotes in H-alpha?
Isophotes.
Yes.
It was, I think, in 1958, I think 58. And trying to have a strip integration across this model or optical observation, I realized again that our radio position is in extreme dark portion of the nebula.
Right.
So it was first observation which incorporate optical and radio knowledge on H2 region, trying to attempt to distribution of the dust. It was very interesting and exciting at this time.
And did you derive the map of the optical?
Yes, I have. It's my thesis.
And your thesis was what year now?
Well, I had two steps. First thesis, I don't know English equivalent.
Master's thesis, perhaps?
Maybe, high resolution observation with the help of Pulkovo radio telescope. And the second thesis is connected with the extension of this work in many other directions, plus some new chapters connected with the idea of the so-called global radio telescope, which can be constructed.
Which you were talking about before.
Yeah,
yes.
In 1967, I made a report on the possibility. I was impressed greatly just by realizing through the laser simulation in our laboratory that UV coverage is extremely good if you can collect existing radio telescope in one array.
Yes.
And UV coveraging during the half day observation is good enough.
You're talking about very long baseline interferometry.
That's right.
Now. Yes.
That's okay. Right. And the second chapter connected with so-called three-dimensional radio astronomy, which can be invented if you can use the orbital satellites
right.
around the sun to having at least 3 points at these dimensions. Sorry. It's possible to find a curvature of the wavefront.
Right.
It's just indication of the distance.
Right.
And you may...
I'm fascinated by this idea that the whole universe may be in the near field of the antenna.
It strikes me greatly.
Fantastic. I mean...
I think it's
yes,
late during discussion time.
What year, though, were these two theses that you did?
Well, the first one was in 1962.
Yes.
And second, not very far from this point, 1970.
And I also wanted to ask, you said that you were in the Crimea and got the optical plates for the Omega Nebula, but you were up in Leningrad, I thought. How did you get down to the Crimea?
Well, during my summer vacation time.
I see. As a student, you were...
I was not a student.
Oh.
Not vacation. How do you call this? Summer. When you are free from your job.
Oh, you're not teaching in the summer.
Yeah.
No. Or do you mean sabbatical?
Just swimming and...
vacation. That's
vacation.
Right.
That's just vacation.
But anyway, you went over to the observatory and got the optical material.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't vacation then, you were working.
Well, it's very interesting work, so...
Well, thank you very much. This has been extremely useful.
Thank you.
Ends the interview with Perisky on 20 August 1979 at the IAU in Montreal. And this is also the end of the tape.